From the heart of rural France, this is the Keto Woman podcast, brought to you by me. Hello, keto lovelies. I'm Daisy Brackenhall, and I've spent most of my life struggling with my weight and confidence, and have always had a difficult relationship with food. Even when I finally got to my target weight after weight loss surgery and eating low carb, I couldn't maintain it and I was miserable. I've been keto now for over 2 years and it has given me the freedom to fall in love with food again without the constant gain, loss, guilt, virtue cycle of before. Health and happiness is where it's at now, running on fat. Welcome to the Keto Woman podcast. Each week I'll be chatting to inspirational women, maybe even the odd man, to discover the secrets to their success so that I can share them with you. So what is keto? Keto is a way of eating that enables you to switch your body's main fuel source from sugar to fat. Who doesn't want to be a fat burner, right? But how do we achieve this? A great place to start is by keeping carbs under 20 grams a day. So things like leafy greens and above ground vegetables, plus some nuts and seeds and the incidental carbs you find in things like full fat dairy. Choose delicious fatty proteins and be free and easy with oily dressings on salad and butter on your veggies. Once you're in the swing of things, you can tweak it to suit you. Make your own personalized keto. You'll hear all sorts of ways to keto from my guests. There is no one way to do keto, no one size fits all. I hope to show you just how flexible and fabulous this way of eating can be. I'm not a doctor, and most of my guests won't be either, so we really can't give you medical advice. It's always best to consult your own doctor when making big changes to your diet and lifestyle, because they know you and your medical history, and so have access to the bigger picture. Wouldn't it be helpful to have one place where you could find all the links? Want to sign up to my new Patreon-exclusive Facebook group, Daisy's Lovelies? No problem. How about subscribing to my YouTube channel? Please help me notch up my first 1,000 subscribers by going to links.ketowomanpodcast.com and following the YouTube link. Not following me on Instagram yet? Hit the Instagram button. You get the idea. All the buttons, all the links you need are at links.ketowomanpodcast.com. Thank you for tuning back in to part 2 of my chat with Carolina Cartier. This is episode number 112. Diagnosed with PCOS at the age of 13, Carolina struggled with weight gain and infertility for 16 years before finding keto. After significant weight loss and reversal of her PCOS diagnosis, Carolina embarked on a career change from financial analyst to certified nutritionist, and will be graduating with a master's in nutrition from Basta University in June 2020. Her research thesis title is Perception and Awareness of Carbohydrate-Controlled Diets for the Management of PCOS, a benchmark study. It examines the experience of women who have modified their diets in an effort to normalize their cycles, combined with the experiences of clinicians and their perception of carbohydrate-controlled diets. Now 5 years keto, Carolina loves sharing the life-changing power of dietary change with others and hopes to continue her research in a PhD program. This week, we find out how Carolina is getting on with weaning her twin boys and how much they like steak. Perhaps you could just tell me what it's been like for you, just the catch up of you personally. You shared before your story of how well keto worked for you, both getting pregnant and during pregnancy. How's it been after that? And yes, how's it been? You know, you must have been through the whole weaning process with your boys now. How did all that go?
Yes. And I had started, I don't think if I had started it the last time we spoke or not, but I have the Keto Babies Facebook group.
I think you were just thinking about starting it.
Yeah, just starting. Yeah. There are several low carb or ketogenic support groups for pregnancy and breastfeeding. And I just wanted to have another one out there that's really focused on support. Some of them get a little salesy, and I understand that, but I just wanted another support group. So I have a group there, and I've really been looking at, again, what's working and what isn't working. What are the struggles that we're having? In my case, I did stay low carb or keto following the birth of the boys. I had some issues with breastfeeding. So I have what's called IGT, which is insufficient glandular tissue. And it just means you don't have as much of the necessary breast tissue and milk producing glands to produce milk. I have some, not as much. Speaking to a lactation consultant and the OB, it likely is just a result of the health conditions I had as a child. Going back, I had precocious puberty as a young child. We're talking 3 years old, where I had an endocrine disorder, and then PCOS diagnosis at 13. And so I can't tell you the exact mechanisms, but I didn't have normal endocrine function as a child. I didn't go through regular normal puberty. And that is likely why I just don't have a sufficient amount of breast tissue. I was still able to breastfeed, even on low carb. I did make, for anyone who is breastfeeding, maybe 25 to 30 ounces a day, which isn't horrible, but I was pumping a lot. And then I had twins as well. So that wasn't enough to feed both twins. We went the route of getting donor milk, which was difficult, but wonderful. So we were able to keep the boys on just breast milk. That was a goal of us for our family, even though formula is an option. And if it's necessary, then absolutely go that route. I continued breastfeeding. I continued pumping as well. And from a diet perspective, I didn't really struggle to stay low carb. I was very hungry. And in my case, I struggled to lose the last bit of pregnancy weight. You know, I gained a normal, healthy amount of weight. The doctors were not concerned that I was gaining too much. I think I was in the realm of like 60 pounds for twins, which seems like a lot. But again, I'm 6 feet tall. So that wasn't an outrageous amount. And that was what they had told me to gain when I first found out I was pregnant. And I thought, there's no way. I've just gone through this extensive weight loss and there's no way I'm going to gain 60 pounds. And it was outside of my control. That was just what happened, even staying keto. And I lost quite a bit at first, but then those last bit of pounds, it was maybe 10, 15, just did not want to budge, which is okay. And sometimes that happens in breastfeeding. I have since learned. So prior to the birth of the boys, I was told, oh, the weight will just fall off. You lose so much weight from breastfeeding. Then while I was breastfeeding and struggling, a bunch of other mothers said, oh, that happened to me too. So all of a sudden they're like, oh no, it doesn't, you know, sometimes your body holds on, you're producing milk, and it seems very individual. From some research that I've done, it appears that because I was struggling to produce enough milk and I was constantly pumping, that might have been partially why. Because if you're producing sufficient milk, it's easier to just burn through the calories, but I wasn't producing as much. So hormonally, my body was holding on to fat to produce more milk, but the milk production wasn't happening. So there's that disconnect. Mm. That appears to be part of why. But in the group, and the advice that I give and what I've seen collectively working is that, and if you go to, there's a great resource, Kelly Mom. It talks all about the science of how milk production happens. And it isn't even it's not a low carb website, but they go into the science of how milk is produced when you're breastfeeding. And it is not carbohydrate based. So we hear that a lot, like carbs will help me produce milk, but it isn't.
I was going to say that gets bandied about, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You're supposed to increase milk production by eating oat cookies or whatever mm-hmm. it is.
Right.
It's not something I'm overly familiar with. Mm-hmm. So it's just comments that I've seen come up, but it does just seem a typical piece of advice.
Right. And it perpetuates. And there is, from what I can tell, the reason that it appears to help, and there are galactagogues, there's a whole, you know, there are these chemical compounds that do help with milk production. But primarily what it comes down to be, from a milk production standpoint, is sufficient calorie intake. So not being undernourished. We do know that being undernourished, being someone who's starving, is going to have a lot of health issues. And one of which is you just don't have enough calories to produce milk. So eating enough calories, and then also being properly hydrated is a big one, because milk is water-based. And so you need to have all of the necessary components in your diet, including liquid, to produce milk. And it seems like, okay, that makes sense. So where does the carbohydrate need come from? I think it's that when, and as we know, when you eat high carbohydrate, you tend to bloat, we store glucose or glycogen with water molecules. We bloat. And when someone goes low carb, they start running to the bathroom a lot. They're losing a lot of water. You also lose with water a lot of sodium and other electrolytes. And so when someone, what I've noticed is if someone is pregnant and already eating low carb, it's easier to just keep going and breastfeed. And it doesn't seem to really be an issue there as far as not producing enough, given that you have sufficient glandular tissues. I haven't really seen like an ongoing issue. And there can be problems on all sorts of different diets and lifestyles. And there can be a lot of issues around breastfeeding unrelated to diet. However, if someone is coming from a really high carb diet, so let's say they were pregnant, they weren't eating low carb at all, it was just kind of eat what you'd like to eat, or even if they thought they're, you know, they're trying to eat a healthy diet, but it was higher in carbohydrate, and then they suddenly cut carbohydrate. Let's say they're already breastfeeding now. That's where I start to see an issue with the change in diet. And it isn't that it's an issue with ketones or an issue with low carb per se, but by cutting carbohydrate, you're going to be losing a lot of water. You're going to be losing a lot of electrolytes. And potentially, I've seen this happen, women can undereat on low carb. They feel so satisfied. I've seen women saying, oh, I just can barely eat anything. And I know there's some women now who've recently had children who are saying, I'm just not hungry. I'm eating only fat bombs. And that could be a problem or it may not be. It just really depends. So the first thing, what I tell women is if they're like, okay, I'm thinking of starting low carb, but I'm currently breastfeeding, or I'm going to do it after I give birth, I recommend to them to taper carbs down slowly. And I say that simply to maintain fluid balance. Because we know anyone who's just started low carb, you do lose a lot of water weight at first. And that's good in a way to get rid of excess bloat. But if you're trying to produce milk, it's a shock to the system. Mm-hmm. So I say taper carbs down and make sure you get your electrolytes. And it's especially important when you're first starting because we do lose electrolytes with water, especially sodium. And so that's the big one. A common practice is to use, I think it's Solae water, S-O-L-E. It's saturated water with salt, right? It's as salty as you can get it, mm-hmm. more salty than the ocean. You just put salt and water in a glass jar. Don't use metal. So you put it in a glass jar and you just keep adding salt until there's a little bit that isn't dissolving. And that means it's as salty as it can possibly get. And then you're going to use some of that. So for example, maybe you take one tablespoon and put that in, you know, your water for the day or something. So you can look up, there's protocols on how to do this. But this is just an easy way to get sodium if you don't want to salt your food extra, you know, if you're like, I don't like that flavor. So that is one thing that you can do to make sure you're getting enough, especially when you first transition. Even if you're not breastfeeding, even if you're just starting low carb, we see this electrolyte deficiency happening all the time, and it can lead to cramps and headaches. And if you are sodium deficient, you will also often waste magnesium, which can lead to other problems, right? So we see the electrolyte balance is important. And it isn't so much that low carb or keto is inappropriate for our electrolytes. It's the sudden change. Mm-hmm. You could change your diet in any way, and a sudden change like that can just cause symptoms. And we see that all the time on different diets. But in the case of low carb, that loss of water, that loss of electrolytes can be a problem for breastfeeding just if you're losing water. So all of that wraps up to say, make sure you hydrate, make sure you get electrolytes, and make sure you're eating enough. And if you do that, I don't see a trend of any sort of issues related to breastfeeding on low carb. So that ends up being my recommendation. And I've seen that in other groups as well. I used that and it helped me to continue to produce milk, which my lactation consultant had warned me that I might not produce anything. She said, you know, prepare yourself. If you're going donor milk, get a stash of that now in the freezer. If you're using formula, you would want to have some of that on hand. And we had both on hand just so that we would be prepared. And I was fortunate that I produced almost enough for one baby, which is pretty good. You know, we were expecting close to nothing. So that was pretty good. Then the demand of twins, we dipped into the stash and fed them collectively with all these other methods. So it's definitely possible. And one thing we see over and over, I've seen women, they'll have pictures of their milk before they went keto and then pictures of their milk afterward. And very often the milk after keto is much more fatty, which could make sense if you're eating more fat. It depends on how you're eating low carb. Mm-hmm. It could make sense. Milk also adapts to the child and their needs at the time. But when we're looking at brain development and brain, you know, growth of an infant, they do need a lot of fat. They need cholesterol. It's important that it be in there. So that's just something I see in a lot of pictures. I can't say that I have data on that, but we do see that, and happy, fast-growing, well-nourished babies as a result. And, you know, the mother's also getting healthier in the process.
Absolutely. It's interesting, isn't it? Breastfeeding, it's not a direct case of whatever you intake doesn't just come out through the breast milk. It's not as straightforward as that. As I see all these debates about if the mum has a glass of wine, you know, you get people in uproar about it, but it's not the case of that wine doesn't just come out in the breast milk, does it? Your body's very good at developing the breast milk from whatever comes in. But presumably there's some kind of change depending on the input. As you said, potentially there might be a change in the fat content with keto. Mm-hmm. How does that work? I'm completely oblivious to how that works, but I can see how it's not just a simple case of what goes in comes out through the breast milk.
Before we find out more about breast milk, I need to take a few moments to tell you about the sponsor of this week's podcast, Superfat. Superfat make macadamia and almond-based convenient on-the-go closable nut butter pouches, which are certified keto and paleo. This high-density energy source will give you a boost whenever you need it and would be perfect to take with you on long-haul flights so that you have something to keep you happy and away from those airline snacks. I bet your kids would love them in their lunchboxes. And what about you for a post-workout recharge? Or as I used one the other day, a post-chainsawing trees down recharge? They're all delicious, but if you don't want to eat anything with sweeteners in them, there are two flavors that are perfect for you. The MCT macadamia and probiotics and the macadamia coconut, which both have no sweeteners at all. Just delicious plant fats, protein and high amounts of fiber. A dynamic trifecta to help keep you feeling full longer. Why not try them out for yourself or treat a friend to the perfect keto Christmas gift? Use code DAISY for a festive 15% off your order at superfat.com. Thank you for taking the time out to listen. And thank you, Superfat, for supporting this podcast. Now let's get back to Carolina and breast milk.
Right. And I am not a breastfeeding expert. So that website, Kelly Mom, has more information. But what I can say is that mammal milk in general has somewhat of a formulation. And then depending on the mammal, it has a slightly different formulation. For example, a concern with feeding infants cow milk is that cow milk is very low in iron compared to human milk that is higher in iron. And that's a formulation. So as long as the mom has sufficient stores and sufficient intake of what is necessary, then that formulation is somewhat set of what's going to come out as breast milk, right? Mm. And contents do change. There's a feedback mechanism. So saliva, if you are breastfeeding directly, saliva from the infant will go into the mother and say, oh, I need this antibody, or, oh, this baby is at, you know, this age and needs this formulation of breast milk. And there is, it's astonishing to me, and I'm not an expert, but it is amazing, this mechanism of adaptive milk production that we do, right? And so it's just so, so interesting. It also has, you know, just throwing that out there, human milk also has lactose, which we talk about lactose intolerance, but it also has lactase enzyme, and babies also produce some of their own lactase. And so, but human milk does have lactose, and I've seen cases where infants were lactose intolerant and they had an intolerance to breast milk. I don't understand how that's possible, but I've read those cases and it exists. And so that's really interesting. So human milk is adaptive. Now, there can be some byproducts that end up in breast milk, but for the most part, we have a pretty good filtering system. our human detoxification system, and I mean as far as, you know, how we handle fructose or alcohol or caffeine, or, you know, we have our own detoxification mechanisms. And so you can have, depending on where you live and depending on the amount, right, they have set limits on the amount of alcohol or caffeine that you can ingest that they say is perfectly safe because your body will detoxify that as normal and not just send it directly to the milk. Mm. One thing I hear all the time too, is it safe to lose weight while I'm breastfeeding because of these stored toxins, quote unquote, that are in my fat cells? And won't those go directly to the milk? I don't have a full answer other than it does not seem to be a problem to lose weight if you have extra weight to lose while you're breastfeeding. Part of that is just the normal process, right? Let's say you gain weight during pregnancy as is expected, and then you lose some of that weight during breastfeeding. Doesn't seem to be an issue. And again, we detoxify ourselves, right? And cells, every cell in the body is constantly breaking down and being reformed, and our bone gets reformed and remodeled. And so I don't put too much concern there. I haven't seen research that says, that would indicate that this is a big issue to lose some weight if you are overweight. I haven't seen any physicians saying, oh no, you need to maintain your overweightness because of toxins in your fat cells. From just losing weight at a normal pace from dietary intervention. So that's another thing.
And the human body is smart, right? I mean, if it's smart enough to react to the saliva of the baby to change the composition of the breast milk, it's smart enough not to dump any toxins that might be ingested or that need to be expelled in some way. The last place it's going to put that is in the breast milk. That's yes. A really important food for growing another human. It's the last place it's going to put it.
Right. And most of our waste comes out, byproducts or detoxifications and things come out through urine or feces, or if it's a volatile compound, often we breathe it out. And so we have a very robust system for these. That doesn't mean there is an overflow. There have been some toxic compounds, usually related if they're near some sort of processing plant or something where they're ingesting something at a very high rate that was causing health issues already, right? But from a normal detoxification level, it doesn't seem to be a big issue. But again, I am not a lactation specialist, but I learned enough as I was breastfeeding. I read a lot of resources. I looked into some of the research that's around weight loss. And in general, being a healthy weight seems to always be a good thing. Again, given adequate nutritional intake, adequate hydration, adequate electrolytes, it doesn't seem to negatively impact breastfeeding to be on, you know, a carbohydrate controlled or a low carb or a ketogenic diet.
And what about your boys? What do you feed them? Have you weaned them on strips of steak? How's that worked?
we've been working. So, wow. Before I was a mother, since having children, I have realized that I had a lot of preconceptions or judgments that I didn't know I had. I thought I was pretty open-minded. And it's the same thing with, you know, the right way to keto. I thought I was just saying, hey, this is the most effective. Let's all work together. And I realized everything's more complicated and parenting is more complicated than I ever realized. And I never thought getting my children to eat would be so difficult.
A bit of a rude awakening.
I was so naive about parenting. So they eat a whole food diet. We do not eat processed chicken nugget style things. However, they are on, I guess you could say, a moderate carbohydrate diet in the sense that, you know, there is some rice or there is some grain, which I don't necessarily think in a healthy person, there's no room for that. What I do is prioritize protein. I think that's very important. And I also make sure they are getting plenty of fat, especially like EPA, omega-3 fats. And so that mostly comes from fish. So we're looking at EPA and DHA in that cycle. And so we do get plenty of protein. That is the focus of our meals, whether that be fish or beef or pork or whatever it is. And then they do get some sides of perhaps a rice. We do some vegetables. I guess for myself, I don't prioritize vegetables. So I don't think about prioritizing it for them. But we really are a protein-focused family in general. So they eat what we eat. They decide how much to eat. There's no clean your plate rule. They can decide what to eat, but you will eat leftovers the next day because I try to save food until it can no longer be eaten. That is what we do. So yeah, there's some steak. Last night, the two of them, I don't know the ounces, but between the two of them, they polished off 1.5 of 4 steaks that we had cooked, which I was not expecting that. Mom didn't get a full steak, so I wasn't expecting that, but they were hungry and kept eating. And that's what we tend to do, right? We're like, here, have some off my plate, you know, because I want to make sure they're getting all those proteins for growth. So that's what we do. We prioritize protein. I would say they are definitely lower carb than your average American child. We don't do sugar. We don't do juices. We don't do anything like that. They just drink water and occasionally an herbal tea. Sometimes they like to have that for a different flavor, but we stay away from the heavily processed, super high glycemic foods. And that's where we are now. As they get older, and you know, we spoke about that, as you can reason with your child, then we can have discussions around that. But we even had one of them had to have feeding therapy. He was over a year old and we couldn't get him to eat anything. He just wanted breast milk and that was it. And I get it, it's good stuff. But as children age past 6 months and up to a year, there's more nutrition that they need than what breast milk can provide past a certain point. And so we had to use feeding therapy, just like, okay, let's try to eat what I'm eating. And so I had normal parent struggles, right, that we all have. So it wasn't all just a breeze, but I've learned a lot. And it's kind of a crash course, right, is what happens because you have to figure it out. So that's where we are now. I would say protein and fat is more important in my mind, just like for myself, just like for most people. I would say to me, that's a priority. We don't have an essential carbohydrate, but there is some negotiation happening with my 2-year-olds right now to make sure that they have some food.
I can understand the panic if you have a child that is refusing to eat anything bar, mm-hmm. you know, whatever it is, pasta, for example. And you must get to a point where you're just really panicking and, well, I'm just going to give them whatever it is they're prepared to eat because they've got to eat.
Yes. I mean, and that I was scared. I'm thinking my child's going to starve. Now, it's highly unlikely. They will get hungry and eventually eat, but they're going to put you through a very unpleasant time if they're extremely hungry. There's going to be crying and screaming and they will have hunger pains. And how do you tell a 1-year-old, look, you know, you'll feel better if you eat this. So there was a transition and negotiation with certain foods. And for a while there, it's like, what can we just get him to eat that isn't liquid? So I went through that. And again, we'll optimize later. But what's important now, there are critical time periods for childhood development. And most of the brain growth occurs before age 3. So you kind of reach this, kind of set the maximum capacity for brain growth around age 3. And then from there, just things fill in, right? And they learn more things. What's very important are omega-3 fatty acids. And so that was something I had to figure out how to do that. And one way was that I blended sardines into a tomato sauce or a pasta sauce, and they had it over a rice pasta. Mm. Now, I don't eat rice pasta, but it was a way that I could get them to eat fish when we were struggling with any sort of solids, right? And we hear that like this hiding and whatnot. My hope, and I'm not going to say solid plan because I've learned those plans don't always work, but my hope is to get them eating a very similar diet to what I consume, mostly because it's so nutrient dense. And I think of grain, carbohydrates, and just a lot of the processing that we have, these are displacing foods. They're not nutrient dense. We might fortify them and try to add things, but on their own, they really don't have a lot of nutrition compared to a piece of salmon, a piece of steak, right? Or if you're consuming plant matter, just looking at bright colored or dark colored vegetables that we're having, I would say a steak and broccoli is going to be far more nutritious than, you know, just some pasta or whatever they're having, or chicken nuggets that may not even be all chicken. So my hope is to get them on to what I'm eating. And I see that there are a lot of keto kids groups, groups out there, and people that I follow who have older children. And then you can say, all right, this is what we eat. And then it has wonderful results. Mm-hmm. But I'm kind of in that phase where they're just learning to understand, right? Well, you can eat this or not eat anything. And so that's where we are.
It's all a learning curve. Mm-hmm. And like you say, you can have plans and you can have ideals, and you have to learn to adapt that depending on what's happening on the ground.
Yes. And it has helped me. Parenthood, motherhood has helped me understand other people in general, right? I'm more understanding and compassionate about circumstances, whether that's dietary related, parenting related, school, work, just in general, because it's added a whole new layer to my life, complexity to my life. And again, there's things you think you understand, but you don't until you go through it. So I'm thankful, because I think it'll make me a better researcher. I think it makes me a better person for sure, to have that understanding. Because one of the benefits that I bring to keto or low carb or this nutrition world is that I had these health issues. I struggled through it on my own. I reversed them and I got the end result. And so now I have this new layer of, I've been there too, I've struggled with it, and I can at least understand your perspective and point of view. Even if it's different than mine, I understand it's complex. So I think it's a benefit, but we'll see time-wise how that works with researching.
It must be a great resource, your Facebook group, your Keto Babies Facebook group, to see that diversity, to see everyone else's experience. That must really help with your research as well.
I think it does, and it helped guide the questions that I was writing. I used all these groups, just seeing the questions that were posted and seeing some of the responses that were posted, just kind of unofficially saying, this is what's happening. This is what people are thinking about when they're formulating their version of a carb controlled diet. This is what they're looking for. These are the questions they're asking. Is it safe during breastfeeding? Is it safe for me to lose weight? Is it safe to have, you know, so I can say, all right, let's ask these questions again in a controlled environment where I'm collecting these responses. And so hopefully I can then produce a resource that answers, you know, it's a one pager. Here are the, you know, top 20 questions that are asked, and here's the collective response from the community, which is not only helpful to other people starting low carb, if they're looking at fertility or otherwise, but also for physicians. And this is a problem. We see some of the, in the low carb world, physicians who are saying, you know, I get asked these questions and I don't know what to say. There's no official medical response for me to give. But then you have someone like Dr. Westman, who I love listening to him. Mm. I love hearing how he works with patients. And he says, I have this one pager, and we go over it as many times as possible. And I say, do what works for you. And you just keep repeating it, because his goal is to have his patient be healthy. And there's no other agenda. There's no right way or wrong way. He's like, this is what typically works. You can make adjustments, but if there's a problem, we'll troubleshoot, and just over and over. And so I love listening to his approach that is very accessible to helping people reach their goal, and saying, okay, let's take the agenda, the bias out of my work, and say, what's the goal here and how can we get there?
Mm. Fabulous. Well, it's been 2 years and you've packed an awful lot into that. So thanks for catching us up on everything you've been doing. And I wish you the best of luck going forward.
Yes. Thank you so much for helping with all the help you've done. I know at Keto Fest, I was able to talk about the surveys, and then this opportunity to talk about the surveys again, which is plugging that in. Keto Babies has the link. If you're interested in helping this research, you can go there and take the survey. And that should be open past December and into January, but then I have to close it to do the analysis. So there's a little bit of a time restriction there. But thank you so much.
Great. So there's plenty of time. So get on it, people. Mm-hmm. Like to get those numbers up. Well, perhaps you could round us off in the traditional fashion with a top tip.
I forgot that. I should have remembered, because I listen all the time. You know, I think I'll go back. I think this is the quote I used 2 years ago, and I still use it, and I use it with myself. So I am someone who is always afraid to pull the trigger, right? To say, let's go. Let's just start. I will prepare and think about it and go round and around. And
oh, me too. Yeah. Procrastination overload.
Right. And it's like, well, I'm not perfect. I can't do it yet. And this happened with the surveys. It took me weeks to just say, okay, publish, do it. Like they're live. So the quote that I come back to is, a year from now, you'll wish you had started today. Mm. It could be a week from now, a month from now, right? Time is going to march forward, and just starting with all the problems and all the stumbling and just starting is going to get you there faster, and you're going to learn something by starting. It doesn't need to be perfection. And I think that holds us back from doing things that we want to do. So we're thinking, okay, well, there's this party, or there's this birthday, or I don't know how to cook this, or I don't have a meal plan, or I don't, you probably know more than you think you do. And you probably have a general idea. You could take one step, right? We're just going to remove candy, or we're just going to do anything. So just start, because we're looking for progress, not perfection, right? And your goal is going to be different than anyone else's goal. So just go for it. Stop waiting. You've got it. Start today.
I remember actually using that, working back the other way, when I'd had my weight loss surgery and I was in that process of losing the huge amount of weight. And I would go through long periods where nothing was happening at all. You know, despite having this pretty invasive surgery, I was still stalled out for these great long periods. And that's what I reminded myself of. I would say to myself, just keep plodding forward, because in a year's time, you will have got further forward just by focusing on the weeks and the months when things don't seem to be happening. You'll look back in a year and you will have made a jump forward. So it kind of works both ways, doesn't it?
Well, and I think about my weight loss. You know, I've lost around 200 pounds, but my average wasn't even 2 pounds a week when you average it out, when I look at how long that it took. And other people would say, oh, that's too slow. I've only lost 3 pounds this month. But as you said, you keep going and it adds up over time. Mm. It's a learning process. Every step of the way, you're finding what makes you feel better. If weight loss is your goal, or if just general health or balancing hormones or whatever the goal is for you, when we start comparing ourselves to what we think it should be, it just holds us back. Well, I don't know. That's intimidating. But slow and steady worked for me. You know, looking back now, no one says, oh, wow, you lost 200 pounds, but it was slow. So I guess it doesn't count, right? Yeah. No one thinks that, right? No one says that. And it doesn't matter, because now I have found what works for me for the rest of my life, hopefully. Mm. And I no longer struggle. I'm not having cravings. I don't feel deprived. I'm pretty much at a goal weight. Anything from here would just be, as you've called it, vanity weight. I'm healthy, right? I do not have any physician telling me I need to lose more weight for health reasons. So I'm in a good place and I have no trouble maintaining. And the fact that it was, you know, 1 point something pounds per week is irrelevant now.
Mm. But it's still, you know, that adds up. That's a lot over a year.
Exactly.
Well, thank you very much for taking time out of your very busy life. It's been a great pleasure talking to you, Carolina. Thank you.
Thank you.
To get the resources and links from this show, please go to ketowomanpodcast.com/episodes. Please share this podcast with as many people as possible by sharing one of my links or just taking a screenshot of an episode that you enjoyed. Reviews really help raise the profile of the podcast, which gets it in front of more people, but also helps me attract a wide variety of guests. So please take a minute to leave a review on whichever podcast app or platform you like to listen on. It doesn't go unnoticed by me, the people who regularly like, share and comment on my posts. Your support really does mean the world to me. Thank you. Are you enjoying this podcast? Help me make more episodes and videos by making a pledge at my Patreon page, patreon.com/ketowoman, or simply hit the support button on the Keto Woman Podcast website. Don't forget to join in the fun on the Keto Woman Podcast Instagram and Facebook pages, and Daisy_KetoWoman on Twitter. Are you my next extraordinary woman? Maybe you've got an idea for a show, a topic you would like to hear about. Let me know how I can tickle your earbuds by dropping me a line at daisy@ketowomanpodcast.com. This week's end quote is from Drake. Before you give up, think of the reason you held on so long. Bye-bye, keto lovelies.